Dear listeners, Sairam from Prashanthi Nilayam and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. So we are in this second volume that Bhagwan himself had penned, Sandeha Nivarini. This is the stream of answers that Bhagwan gave to the questioning bhakta, the questioning mind that is there in every devotee. Sandeha means doubt. Nivarini is the one who removes, the process of removing these doubts. Sandeha Nivarini is that text which will remove the doubts from your mind and help you walk on the spiritual path with greater clarity and energy. So we are there now in chapter 11 of Sandeha Nivarini. Every week we take a little segment and we pray to Bhagwan so that he helps us understand what he has himself written. And chapter 11 is broken into three segments, and in the last few weeks we have been spending so much time trying to grasp what Bhagwan has given us. This begins with the bhakta, the devotee, asking Bhagwan, what is the meaning of asti bhati priyam? Why is it that some people describe Brahman as asti bhati priyam? And Bhagwan explains what is asti, what is bhati, what is priyam, and goes on to say how asti bhati priyam is nothing but sat chit ananda. Sat chit ananda is something that many of us have heard. Many of us are familiar with this concept of the divine being sat chit ananda. Divine is always adored as sat chit ananda swarupa. Bhagwan says that sat chit ananda is nothing but asti bhati priyam. Asti means is, and that is what is sat, that which is. Bhati is that which shines. That is that awareness. Sat chit, that is the chit. And priyam is that which is pleasing, which is desirable, which gives us joy, and that is what is ananda. So, sat chit ananda is asti bhati priyam. And when the devotee says, Swami, it's so beautiful that asti bhati priyam is nothing but sat chit ananda, and each one of us is in fact sat chit ananda in flesh and blood. Why is it that we are not able to experience this? Why is it that we are not able to recognize this and live in this joy? And that is where Bhagwan says that it is because of various obstructions, various obstacles that you have created within yourself. Obstructions of the past, obstructions of the present, obstructions of the future. And talking about the obstructions of the present, Bhagwan says that there are four types of such obstructions. Attachment to sense objects, cynical criticism, dullness of understanding, and absurd conceit. And Bhagwan in segment 11.3 gives us various methods by which we can overcome these obstructions of the present. The reason we are not able to experience that joy that we are not able to experience that divine principle that we truly are, is because of dullness of understanding. Because of little understanding, there is a lot of confusion in the mind. We don't understand what the Master has given us in the right spirit. Our senses derail us. We get attached to things that takes us away from the right path. And we derive wrong meanings from the teachings of the Guru, because we don't listen to the Guru in complete faith. We get carried away by what other people say about the Master's words. And absurd conceit, Swami says, happens because at some point in time we feel that we are what we are because of the effort that we have put in. And that ego, when it surfaces, that is when we lose our way. We think we are progressing, but we have started regressing. When we start identifying ourselves with our body, with our senses, Bhagavan introduces the obstructions of the present in segment 11.2. And in segment 11.3, Bhagavan gives us the solutions. So when the Bhakta asks, Swami, how can we overcome the obstructions of the present? Swami says, everything can be overcome. There is a solution through karma. There is no obstruction that one cannot conquer. But it can be done only through our acts. What kind of acts we should engage in so that these four obstructions do not trouble us? And that is when Bhagavan talks about sama, dama, uparati, titiksha. Attachment to sense objects, Swami says, can be removed by sama, dama, uparati, titiksha, which are basically exercising restraint on our internal sense organs, external sense organs, withdrawal of desires. Titiksha is that state of forbearance. The power to forbear whatever comes in life through the grace of the Lord. Keeping our energy strong, keeping our mind at peace, keeping our heart in equanimity, knowing well that whatever I am going through has been designed by my Lord for my own good. So, we did spend some time in the last few weeks contemplating on sama, dama, uparati, titiksha. Bhagavan goes further in explaining to us what are the other things that we should do so that this dullness of understanding will go, this cynical criticism will go, this absurd conceit will go. So all that Swami explains in this last segment of chapter 11. So let's listen to what Bhagavan has given us, and then, like in every episode, we will spend some time trying to assimilate the directions that Bhagavan has given and see how they can translate into our own lives.
Swami, just like there is a way to overcome obstructions of the past, can we get over the obstructions of the present?
Why not? There is a way for this also. For every obstruction, there is certainly a way out through karma. There is no obstruction that cannot be surmounted. Attachment to sense objects can be removed by sama, dama, uparati, titiksha. That is, by developing purity, self-control, withdrawal of desires, and the ability to suffer. Dullness of understanding can be removed by listening again and again. Constant meditation on the things heard will abolish the habit of cynical criticism. All absurd conceit will vanish through living those teachings in one's life.
Swami, To master all this seems impossible for everyone. To make it easy for all, tell me, which is important?
My dear fellow, to know a thing is vijnana. To be ignorant of it is ajnana. Don't you know this?
So many people say so many things about this vijnana and this ajnana. What is the basis for the two?
Now you have come again to the very first step. Ajnana is the mental attitude that has reference to the external object, and vijnana is the mental attitude that has reference to the internal subject, that is Atma. Ajnana is known also as manas and chittam. When the activity and attitude turn inwards, they are called buddhi and ahankara.
Some say that the accumulated merit of the jnani is only to enable him to attain the higher world. Is this true?
Both the jnani and the ajnani will have desire, absence of desire, desire for the other world, and accumulated consequences of past actions, all in equal measure. Their experiences also will be in equal measure. Only the jnani will not have the consciousness that he is the doer. So he will not be bound. The ajnani is conscious that he is the doer, and so he gets bound. This is the distinction. I have already told you, haven't I, that the mind is the cause of bondage as well as of liberation? The mind is the cause of everything.
Mind, mind, they keep on saying, what is it? What is its form?
The form of the mind is the thoughts. If you understand the origin of thoughts, then there will be no bondage at all.
What is that basis?
The basis is what you refer to as I. Seeking for the I, if you are in that I state, however many thoughts come and go, you will remain unaffected.
Right. That is very good, Swami. Please make all this soak into our brains so that we may realize the purpose of our lives. I shall take leave, Swami.
Do so. Leave gladly and return later. Take my blessings with you.
So that is how chapter 11 of Sandhya Nivarini ends. So when the devotee asks Swami, what are the ways we can get over the obstructions of the present? After Bhagwan talks about sama, dama, upurati, titiksha, Swami says dullness of understanding can be removed by listening again and again. Constant meditation on the things heard will abolish the habit of cynical criticism. All absurd conceit will vanish through living those teachings in one's life. I'm reminded of a little story of a grandfather and the grandson. So this grandfather, who was a farmer, lived on a farm in the mountains with his young grandson. And every morning, the grandpa would wake up early and he would sit at the kitchen table and he would read the Bhagavad Gita. And the grandson adored his grandfather. Everything that the grandfather did was awesome for the grandson. And the grandson was always thinking, when I grow up, I have to be like my grandfather. So everything that the grandfather did, the grandson would try to emulate. So when the grandson saw that every morning grandfather is reading the Bhagavad Gita, he said, I also want to do the same. I will also get up early in the morning and read the Bhagavad Gita, just like my grandfather. And he started doing that. He did it for 2 days, he did it for 3 days, he did it for 4 days. And then one day he came to the grandfather and he said, "Grandpa, I tried to read the Bhagavad Gita just like you do every morning. I have seen you do that every morning. I am watching you. But I don't understand. I read the Bhagavad Gita because you read the Bhagavad Gita, but I don't understand anything what is written there. And even if I understand anything, I forget everything. When I close the book, everything just disappears. I don't register anything that I read there. What good does reading the Bhagavad Gita do? What is the whole point of reading the Bhagavad Gita? Why are you doing it?" So the grandfather quickly now turned towards this boy. The grandfather was actually quietly putting coal into the stove. He just looked at this boy and he said, "Okay, my dear, can you do something for me? You take this coal basket, go down to the river and bring me back a basket of water." And the boy did as he was told. He picked up the basket which is generally used to carry coal. And because the grandfather said, "Get water in this," so he went down and he filled that basket with water and he ran up the hill to their house, to their little home. But by the time he reached home, as expected, all the water leaked out. And the grandfather laughed. He said, "What is this? I told you to get water and you've got empty basket. You know what, grandson? You need to run a little faster. The pace at which you are running now is not enough. You have to fill the basket with water and run in such a way that by the time you reach the house, all the water has not leaked out of the basket." So the grandson said, "Okay, Grandpa, I will do it. And this time I'm going to run really, really quick." And so he went down and he filled the basket with water and he sprinted to the grandfather. But unfortunately, even though he was out of breath, there was not more than 2-3 drops of water in the basket. And he told the grandfather, "It is impossible, Grandpa. You don't understand. I can't carry water in a basket like this. It has such big holes. Shall I take a bucket?" And the grandpa says, No. I don't want a bucket of water. I want a basket of water. I don't know. I just think that you're not trying hard enough. I think if you really try, you probably will be able to do it." But the boy said, "Grandpa, you know what? It is not possible. But if you're insisting, you know, I'll just do it once more. And I'm going to really run crazy fast this time. And you will see that it is not possible." And he went down, dipped the basket into the river and really did a sprint that he had never done before. And huffing and puffing, panting, he was there in front of his grandfather, but still there was hardly any water in the basket. he said, "Grandpa, can't you see? It is all a futile effort. It is not giving any return. It's useless." And the grandpa said, "Do you think it's useless?" "I don't think so. Look at the basket." And the boy looked at the basket. The grandpa said, "Is the basket not different? Isn't it not looking very different than what it was before you started going down to the river?" "Look at it carefully. Earlier it was a dirty old coal basket, and now with your efforts, it has become so clean. It is such a clean basket, inside out. The basket is no more black and there is no dirt there. Do you understand?" And the grandson said, "I don't understand anything, Grandpa." Then the grandpa reveals, "Son, that is what happens when you read the Bhagavad Gita. As you read, you might not understand, you might not remember everything. But when you continue to read, you will become clean inside and outside. You will be changed. You will never be the same person again. Just like the basket, after your attempts is not the same. Similarly, every time you read the Bhagavad Gita, whether the basket got water or not, the basket became purer and purer. This is what will happen to you every time you open the sacred Bhagavad Gita. And that is the reason why I am opening this text every morning. I know it is cleaning me every day. This is the work of God in our lives," the grandpa said. And if you see here, Bhagavan is telling, this dullness of understanding can be removed by listening again and again. This is what continuously contemplating, continuously listening to the scriptures will do to us. Our wrong interpretations, our wrong understandings, our misconceptions about the master's words, our faulty conclusions about the master's actions, all that will melt away. It will help us how we can live in society and still make spiritual values the real motivation of our lives. Each one of us must find his or her own way. We all have our different paths. So many people ask questions like, "What is this business of living all about? How can we come to terms with ourselves and add richness and meaning to our daily lives?" There is a delightful analogy from the Mahabharata, the same Mahabharata which gives us the sacred text of Bhagavad Gita. Mahabharata points out the folly of anyone accepting the teachings in blind faith, for we cannot know the true nature of things if we just listen without really reflecting and questioning, any more than the spoon can have any idea of the taste of the soup. And that is where the reason must come in. But more than that, the intuition and the power of discrimination. When Arjuna was so despondent, Krishna urged him to seek this wisdom by service, by intense searching, by inquiry, by humility. So it begins with that intense listening. It begins with that satsang. It begins with tuning our mind to the stories, to the glories, and to the ways of the Lord that is described in the scriptures. Swami says that just like we sweep our house every day, in the same way we have to continuously keep listening. Sarvada, sarvakaleshu, sarvatra harichintanam. Swami used to always say any number of times in his discourses. Swami says you may not have any other resource, but the strength derived by the repetition of the name is resource enough. You don't need the whole of river Ganga to slake your thirst, Swami says. One glass is enough. Similarly, if we are continuously listening every day to something good, and in these days with satsangs happening in every corner of the world, I know so many people who spend a certain part of their day every day listening to the stories of the Lord. There are so many Samarpan sessions, there are so many satsang sessions, there are so many study circles that are happening in every home, in every community, in every center. And it is such a beautiful way to help ourselves get over the obstructions of the present, as Bhagavan says. Perhaps never before we had this kind of proliferation of recollection of the times with Bhagavan that is happening now. People in their homes can access beautiful stories of people who have lived with the Lord, people who continue to experience His presence. And to make the most of this opportunity is a choice that each one of us can make. If you look at all our journeys, we all have come to Bhagavan because we first heard about Him. Someone told us. We overheard someone talking about Him, or we read a book. Somehow, it was His grace that our ears were blessed to hear about Him. And if we were fortunate to hear about Him when He was physically there, and we had the opportunity to see Him, definitely it was one of the most precious gifts that destiny bestowed on us. But even if we were not fortunate to see Him physically, as we listen to Him, as we listen to all the stories of people who have lived with Him, we can recreate that in our lives. We can recreate those beautiful moments. We can relive as we listen to these stories. So every journey begins with this listening. Bhagavan used to call all these instances how people come to Him as His calling cards. There are so many ways people, Swami would ensure that His name falls in our ears. So it starts with that Shravanam. And once we know about the Lord, then this listening to His glory becomes the first step in our sadhana. In fact, in the Navabhidha Bhakti, as we all know, in the 9 steps of devotion, it starts with Shravanam. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam. That's how it goes until we reach the stage of Atma Nivedanam. So listening to the glories of the Lord is the alarm clock which wakes us up to begin our spiritual journey. But how to ensure that this listening is effective? What is very important is when we listen, we need to listen through a mind that is unencumbered, a mind that is childlike, a mind that is not listening with prejudices. Swami would always say, if the brain is empty, you can fill it with any material. But if it is already preoccupied, then how can anything new get in there? We have to empty the mind of the feelings of me and mine, Swami used to always say. There is a difference between hearing and listening. Listening requires the total attention of the mind. And that desire to do what Lord wants me to do. In fact, as we grow in our devotion, our listening also improves, isn't it? The same story of the Lord. You heard maybe 5 years ago and He did something to you, and today, after knowing Swami for 5 years and after having experienced His love, when you listen to the same story, something else happens, isn't it? Tears just automatically come because you have gone through the beautiful joy of loving the Lord, and now every story touches you. Any story becomes your story because you have gone through that journey. And even if there are tears, this is the joy that you want to live for in your life. Even if there is pain, you don't mind this pain, because crying for the Lord is always a pain that is sweet. And that is the reason why, as we listen, we have to keep our minds open, so that whatever we absorb, whatever comes, registers and has an impact in our mind. Swami narrates a story to highlight the involvement of the mind. A teacher was teaching subtraction to his students in a maths class, and one of the students was engrossed in a mouse finding its way into a crack in the ceiling, and this student was watching the mouse disappear until only their tail was sticking out, when the teacher suddenly interrupted this boy whose gaze was only on that mouse. And the teacher asks, okay, what remains if you take out 5 out of 9? If one takes 5 out of 9, what remains? And the boy says, teacher, only the tail remains, because he saw that only the tail of that mouse was still out. I mean, Bhagwan was just telling us how it is so important for us to put our everything when we are listening. Shravanam is that listening of the highest grade. It is not the ears, it is all your organs which are listening. Your skin is listening, your nose is listening, your eyes They are also listening. Every part of your being, they are listening. That is how, when we have Bhagwan's darshan too, isn't it? Isn't the experience the same? When you are having Bhagwan's darshan, it is not just the eyes which are seeing. It is like your whole body is seeing. Your skin, your ears, your nose, everything is having the darshan. Everything is suffused in that vibration. We don't see only through the eyes. The skin also sees. The eye also hears. So when we listen, if this listening has to remove the dullness of our understanding, that listening has to be a wholehearted listening, and the listening has to be coupled with that yearning. In fact, talking about listening and yearning, one cannot but think about the story of Parikshit. All of us know that during the battle of Mahabharata, Abhimanyu's wife Uttara was in the family way, and she was carrying in her womb the only heir to the Kuru dynasty. And at about the same time, Ashwatthama, the son of Guru Dronacharya, makes a vow that he will kill the baby which is growing in Uttara's womb. And he's angry because his father was killed by the Pandavas in the war. And Ashwatthama is raging in his hatred towards the Pandavas. And when Uttara comes to know about this curse, she pleads with Lord Krishna to save the baby. And Lord Krishna goes into the womb of Uttara. Lord Krishna takes a tiny form and enters the womb of Uttara to protect this unborn child. And this baby, yet to be born, sees the Lord in all His magnificence while still in the womb. And when the baby is finally born, at that moment, the Lord leaves Uttara's womb. And the baby, as they say, was constantly looking out after he was born. He was constantly searching. He was examining every person he was seeing, because he was searching, where is that person who was there with me all this while he disappeared? He was doing everybody's pariksha. That is why he was called Parikshit, because he was constantly searching. He was missing Krishna. He didn't know who was that beautiful person who was with me when I was in the womb of my mother, but now he's not there. And the same baby, when he comes of age and becomes the king, that is the time that Pandavas decide to leave to go to the Himalayas. And Parikshit, being born with the blessing of the divine, was virtuous, was courageous. The kingdom had really an apt ruler, and the kingdom flourished. But after many years, once when Parikshit goes for a hunt in the forest, he comes across a sage who is in deep meditation. And Parikshit was tired in the jungle. He asks for water, and the sage, who was lost in meditation, did not listen to the request of Parikshit, even though he was the king of that area. The sage did not respond. And given that Parikshit was feeling so thirsty, Parikshit sees there a dead snake. And just to test the sage's concentration, he puts that dead snake over the sage's neck and he just leaves the place. And later on, when the son of the sage sees the dead snake around his father's neck, he curses the doer, saying that 7 days from now, the person who committed this disorderly act will die. And when Parikshit learns about this, he's terribly upset with what he has done. He realizes his mistake. And that is when he leaves his kingdom to his son Janmejaya, and he decides to go to the forest. And he decides to go on a fast without water for 7 days. And Parikshit says that he has enjoyed many physical comforts when he was the king. All he wants now is just to listen to the tales of the Lord. He says that is the only thing which will give me peace. Now that I know I just have 7 days more, what better way to spend these days than in suffusing myself in the stories of the divine? And sage Sukha Maharshi recites the Srimad Bhagavatam for 7 days for Parikshit. Parikshit was so engrossed listening to these stories. He was truly listening and he yearned as listening with that deep yearning to become one with the Lord. Listening with tears in his eyes about the magnificence of the Lord. And they say, after the completion of the 7 days, Parikshit's mind did not exist. It became one with the Lord. He was so totally focused on the Lord that when that snake came and took away Parikshit's life, he did not feel anything because he already was liberated. He was liberated listening to the stories of the Lord. 7 days of intense listening, 7 days of listening with yearning, 7 days of listening with faith, 7 days of listening with all your mind, all your senses, all your faculties. That is what listening can do to us. So Bhagavan says, if we are listening to the stories of the Lord, in fact, we know so many such amazing transformations that have happened, especially in these times. I know of a doctor who, when he was going through COVID, he himself being a COVID doctor, he spent his time only listening to the satsangs, these conversations that we air on our website, on the Sri Sathya Sai Media Center's YouTube channels, on our radio. He spent his entire quarantine days listening, and he says, I don't even know how I spent my isolation time. my quarantine time became divine time because of all these beautiful stories that I soaked myself with. There are so many people I have met who have known Bhagwan only after listening to these stories. So many youth who now yearn to become Thai students, who yearn to come to Prashant Nilayam, yearn to become an instrument in his hand, to become his messenger, because they have discovered him by listening to his stories. And after listening comes this beautiful stage which we cannot escape, and this should be the logical stage after listening, which is practicing. Shravanam, mananam, nididhyasanam, Swami would always say. You cannot stop with only listening. A person's hunger will not be appeased just by listening to the word food. The hunger will be appeased only when it takes the food in, digests it, and the food converts itself into energy. So Swami says, listen to all such things that will draw you towards God. Then think it over in silence. As you constantly think over what Bhagwan has told, or that one story you have heard, slowly that incident will give you new insight. That incident will become a part of your consciousness. That one incident will raise you. We cannot listen to the stories of the Lord like we listen any story. Every story of the Lord has multiple dimensions. Every story of the Lord has so many lessons to tell us. Every story of the Lord has something that we can reflect on, juxtaposing that with our journey to the Lord. Every story of the Lord, if it has come to us, it is His will that that story has come to us. To accept every story of the Lord that has come to us as His grace, and see what is it that the Lord is trying to tell me, and learn from that, is such a beautiful sadhana. To be able to listen in a heart that is open and a mind that has no prejudice. If such kind of listening happens, Swami says, all these absurd conceit, dullness of understanding, all this criticism, all that will go. Because we won't be thinking with our limited mind then. We will begin to see things from our heart, and the divine can never be understood from the mind. The divine can only be experienced to some extent only through the heart, only with a childlike faith, only with attentiveness, only with an open mind, only with sincere yearning. When we reflect on His words, can we practice that? And that will have the power to liberate us. Such kind of listening is a puja, is a path of going closer to God. That is why it is called as Shravanam. It is one pathway to reach the Lord, Navabhida Bhakti. One of the Navabhida Bhaktis is Shravanam. They say to a young man who is tossed about the world with his duties thrust upon him by the world outside, who is entangled by his own inner natural promptings, The only way that the senses can be subdued is by listening to the discourses of true devotees. And haven't we, all of us, experienced that? If you hear the stories of the Lord from a voice of purity, if you hear the message of the Lord from a source that reflects the presence of the Master, automatically your senses become calm. Automatically your thoughts cease. Automatically you see that you are not agitated anymore. And this state is so important for our spiritual progress. Many a times we are carried away by our senses, we are carried away by the pulls and pressures. We need divine energy to deal with the way our senses make us go crazy. And we can do that only if we spend time in satsang, only if we spend time listening. And that is the reason why reading sacred scriptures or listening to discourses or listening to the stories empower us. Sri Adi Shankara said, "The company of the wise, even for a moment, becomes the boat to cross across the ocean of samsara." Bhagwan would always stress about satsang. Satsangatve nisangatvam, nisangate nirmohatvam, nirmohatve nischalatatvam, nischalatatve jivana mukti. Jivan mukti, which is the final goal, starts with satsang. Because only when you engage in satsang will you find that energy, that power to subdue the tests and tribulations of the external world. This satsang will help one remove impurities. That is the reason why in the Bhaja Govindam, Sri Adi Shankara encourages his disciples to maintain the company of the good and the noble. This is what will help you to increase your strength. Adi Shankara tells the disciples, it will help you to increase your courage multifold. It will make one open to the good sources of energy. It will help one to protect themselves from rising passions. It will help a human being to become stronger to resist the wicked forces. It will help one with the power to build a fortress around them so that no temptation, nothing can affect them. And this can be built only when one associates with noble souls. With, even if you don't get good people, you can associate yourself with good thoughts. You may not always find godly people, but you can always find goodness in everyone. There is something beautiful in every person. There is an element of godliness in everyone around us. We may not be able to find a person who matches the definition of a good person, but we can always find someone in whom there is some goodness. We can associate ourselves with that goodness. So this Shravanam, listening to these sacred stories, will help one to shun all the negativity. It will help one open one's mind to the power of God. And that is what will ensure that all the obstructions of the present don't affect us. This is what will ensure that with time we can experience that we are indeed Satchit Ananda, we are that truth, we are that bliss, we are that joy, that perennial joy. Swami Chinmayananda used to say, to be in the company of the good is to be with those who are devotees of the Lord and are themselves seekers of the highest. In such an assembly, power gets created. In such a congregation, so much power gets created that you build a powerful fortress against the machinations of the world outside. And I think all of us have experienced that, the power of being in good company, the power of good thoughts, the collective power. Imagine you're going through a difficult time and there are five people who are men of God who come and fill you with faith, fill you with energy, fill you with inspiration. You will just get over that problem. That problem will not do anything to you. They fill you with positivity. And that is what satsang will do to us. Swami would always say, believe in your own experience. Don't go by what other people say. Because faith is the bedrock of spirituality. So Shravanam, followed by Mananam, reflection, and then leading to Nitidhyasanam, meditation on the truth and planting it deep down in the consciousness so that it becomes a part of our spiritual makeup. That is the path by which we can get over the obstructions of the present. This listening will ensure that there is no dullness of understanding. This listening will ensure that there are no more instances of absurd conceit in us, that there are no more instances of cynical criticism in us. And all of these, Swami says, can be achieved through listening with yearning, listening with faith, listening with all our heart. Let this listening take us to liberation. So dear listeners, we'll continue this. There is a little more in segment 11.3 before we move on to the next chapter of Sandhya Nivarini. Let's pray to Bhagwan that we feel His presence as we make our journey in the spiritual path. No matter what, let us keep ourselves tuned to His voice and to His stories and to His glory so that nothing that happens around us disturbs us, and every test that we come across only becomes a testimony of His love. As always, if you have anything to share, anything to tell us, you can write to listener@ssmediacenter.org. You can also send us your comments on our WhatsApp number 9393-258-258. Offering this little endeavor at His lotus feet, I take your leave. Thank you so much. Sairam.